Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. This is my honor, as always, to be able to explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa with you. Today and tonight, showers and thunderstorms with temperatures in the high 70s and between half and a full inch of rain. Saturday and Sunday, you can expect to see the sun again, temperatures in the low 70s on Saturday, and a clear night with temperatures around 50 degrees, and then slight warming with temperatures in the high 70s on Sunday. Nice weekend. On Monday and Tuesday, there's a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms again. Monday is expected to be high near around 80 degrees. Temperatures will drop on Tuesday, but Wednesday and Thursday should be sunny and warm again with around 70 degrees. It should drop down to the 60s a little bit later, but we are getting ahead of ourselves. As we all know, these things can change with the weather. KHOI reporter Whitney Wright is here again. Whitney is still a pretty new addition to our team, and we love having her join us. At this time, she's focusing on bringing you information related on the election series. Later in the show, Mary Rankin, ISU's Director of Sustainability, is coming to tell you about the local food festival at Iowa State University. That's coming up on September 13th. Story County Emergency Coordinator Keith Morgan will be stopping by, too. Okay, Whitney, let's talk for a few minutes about the election season. What issue are you bringing for us to look at today?
Well, one thing at stake in the election is the future of public education. There's a wide disagreement between candidates on the meaning, value of public education. In fact, the continuation of the Department of Education is in question.
For starters, what is the Department of Education and what does it do?
Well, the Department of Education is primarily used to promote student achievement and preparation for global competitiveness by fostering educational excellence and ensuring equal access. They have programs that provide loans, grants, and work study to students in high education, student death relief, minorities, and recently special education in public schools. It's worth noting that of all 15 executive candidates, it has the smallest staff and receives the third highest amount of funding following the Department of Defense and Department of Human and Health Services. The new education law, Every Student Succeeds Act, is a program designed to improve educational outcomes for all, close achievement gaps, increase equity, and improve the quality of instruction, which replaced No Child Left Behind Act from the Bush administration in 2001. They also had a huge involvement during the civil rights era with race and national origin discrimination laws, and more recently, disability discrimination laws. All that being said, a huge question circulating is the Department of Education fulfilling that goal? Do we keep or abolish it? Among Americans, there is a lot of disagreement and strong opinions on this issue as well. For instance, there's this grassroots group called U.S. Parents Involved in Education, composed of parents and educators who launched a campaign earlier this year called Stop Fed Ed, which would like to abolish the Department of Education and return all control to the state and local level. They claim their quality of education is just not up to a par. And according to the DOE website, parents choosing to homeschool their children has gone up to 61.8% between 2003 to 2013.
So that's a radical change.
Yeah, huge increase.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that many are silently in agreement that the Department of Education is failing its students and educators. On the other hand, we have the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals that advocate high quality education, economic opportunity, and democracy, among other things, released a statement expressing concern over Trump's plan for future education, stating that unregulated, unaccountable, for-profit charter schools like the one Trump visited yesterday have destabilized our public districts, defrauded our taxpayers and left our kids and educators worse off, not better. And charter schools are one of the options if the Department of Education is terminated.
So what are the you've mentioned Trump. What are the candidates saying about public education and specifically about the future of the Department of Education?
Well, between Republican candidate Donald Trump and Libertarian Gary Johnson, they would like to abolish the Department of Education, feeling that the federal government has no business in education and that all control should be left at the state and local levels. The phrase they use is pro-school choice, which advocates for systems like charter schools, vouchers, which are where you can choose the school you would like to go to with a government certificate that mm-hmm. pays for the tuition, magnet schools, which are specialized schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, Hillary Clinton says she would keep the Department of Education and utilize it to rebuild public schools and focus on improving teaching equality. The same can be said about Jill Stein from the Green Party, although their approach differs, since Stein would repeal acts like No Child Left Behind and Every Student Succeeds. She feels offers too many opportunities and high stakes for public schools to lose funding if their test scores don't show progress in their annual reporting. For Iowa specifically, Republican Representative Steve King has not made a clear comment on his stance on the Department of Education, but he co-sponsored Parental Rights Amendment, which constitutionally guarantees parents the right to dictate the education of their children, a right many feel is not given with laws like Every Student Succeeds, which is structured by the Department of Education. Kim Weaver is definitely for keeping the DOE.
And Kim Weaver is running for the Senate against
yes.
Kim. I mean the representatives, House of Representatives.
Yes. She was wanting to expand the Pell Grant to offset the cost of college and restructure work-study programs so that they meet tuition costs and create training programs for high school students that provide a marketable skill upon graduation, et cetera, all things handled by the Department of Education. Our Democratic Senator candidate Patty Judge shared similar views, saying on our website, "We need to ensure that every Iowan for access to affordable education from preschool to post-high school, and that young professionals can begin their career without the burden of student loan debt." As for Senator Chuck Grassley, though he doesn't make a clear statement about the Department of Education, he is the founder of the Senate Caucus on Foster Youth, which specializes in helping foster children overcome their obstacles in the education field. And he also is a champion of like tax incentives that will make higher education more affordable, according to his website. So we can assume he is in favor of keeping the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And for even more local, our District 45 candidate, Beth Wessel Crochelle, is highly in favor of more public funding. Having said, it's clear public schools aren't a top priority for Republicans. I believe Iowa's children and their education should be our top priority, feeling that constant delays and stagnant state investments create major problems like dated technology and old textbooks. And Republican candidate Sondra Child-Smith would like to enhance education opportunities and make higher education affordable. Would like have parents more involved in school choice, like Steve King, as I said earlier. So it's hard to say how she feels about the Department of Education,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Mm-hmm.
As for our Democratic Iowa House Representative, Lisa Heddens, she has aided in freezing tuition at Iowa State and increased state funding to keep higher education affordable. So safe to say that she may also be. She has helped fund and improve K through 12 education and expanding preschool to more Iowa children, and helps secure funding for disability and mental health services, which are, like I said earlier, funded through the Department of Education and Public Schools.
Mm-hmm. So the more local candidates, their relationship to the Department of Education is more through local programs and how they would be affected.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And you can definitely see that no matter the side, they all seem to be on the same page with the quality of education.
Yeah. How would the termination of the Department of Education affect college or other post-secondary higher education?
There would be no options for, like, student loan debt relief, because these relief programs exist under the Department of Education. It's even worse when students have debt and also end up failing higher education because they weren't properly prepared by their earlier education. It's a double injury to have debt when you failed because the education system failed to prepare you.
So this also raises the issue of the cost of college. College is becoming expensive, and, you know, the possibility was raised by Bernie Sanders for making college free.
Hillary Clinton has said that community college and all four-year public colleges and universities could be free depending on your economic status if you make roughly like $85,000 or less. She has advocated forgiving student loan debt, which is carried out by the Department of Education. Jill Stein has said she would guarantee tuition-free world-class public education from preschool through university, no matter what your background is, plus forgiving student loan debt. On the other hand, Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson has said the Department of Education should have no say. Education should be left to the states. He claims whether or not college is free should be left to the state to decide. Donald Trump, however, is opposed to the Department of Education continue. He's opposed to student loan forgiveness or free education, saying that education should not be free.
Okay, well, thank you, Whitney. Whitney, this is an issue that seems to be a particular personal interest to you.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
When I spoke earlier with you, you said you were a product of the public school system. Where did you go?
I went to high school in Corsicana, Texas, where I was the only black person in the majority of my classes. They were advanced, like, placement gifted talented courses.
And how did you feel of the quality of public education you got?
Not too good, even though I got a much better end of the deal compared to the education I saw other students around me receiving. Overall, the education I got was lacking. With certain subjects, I pretty much had to educate myself.
How did you experience it as lacking?
Well, for instance, when it came to courses like history, you received limited information in topics like the Civil War. It was very biased. In fact, one of the teachers was a heavy Southern lifestyle enthusiast. So imagine talking about the Civil War from him.
What is a Southern lifestyle enthusiast? What is it?
Like,
that's like a Southern term.
Yeah, like, we should have won the war.
Okay.
Yeah, that sort of deal. An example, like, rhetoric he used, like, he didn't call it the Civil War, but he called it the War of Northern Aggression. He made it a war question.
So on a test, you had to say that the Civil War was called the Northern War of Aggression?
And if you answered with Civil War, that was the wrong answer. And mind you, this was a class preparing you for college. I personally feel that no matter the level of one's courses, everyone deserves good, thorough, quality education. If I receive that treatment in an advanced placement course, imagine what students in regular remedial courses receive. I was a peer coach that helped students in less advanced classes, and I could clearly see they weren't getting any better because the teachers didn't engage with the students on any of the subjects they were supposed to be teaching. They were just given a bunch of busy work.
Saying that, how do you feel about the question, should the Department of Education be terminated or should it continue if your experience with public education wasn't that great?
I definitely say we should keep the Department of Education in place despite my experience with public education, because you can improve the proficiency of teachers and improve curricula. Given that I grew up in the South and the education I experienced, it seems like that if Texas and many other states were given complete control over education, they would tarnish subjects and neglect or even hinder students from getting the education they deserve. We have a better chance of ensuring that everyone isn't subject to that type of experience if we keep federal government oversight in place. It would certainly help students to prepare for college. Less students will feel unprepared for college and overwhelmed due to not having learned complete material beforehand. When that happens, and students fail out of college and into debts, it's just really cataclysmic.
Well, thank you, Whitney Wright, speaking about the issue of education during selection season. And thank you for sharing your point of view. And at the end of the day, the question to you as listener, KHOI, is what do you think about this? What is your point of view? And vote accordingly on November 8th.
All right. Thank you for having me.
The future of education is one aspect of American life that will be affected by how we all vote on November 8th. And everybody has their own take on their experiences and what they think it adds up to. We're also going to be airing a special series on the election every Thursday morning at 7 a.m. up until election time on November 8th, with repeat broadcasts every Saturday morning of the same show. So check us out on Thursday or Saturday morning. I think this Thursday we will be continuing this topic of education a little bit more, and among other things, explore more in depth how things actually play out locally here in Iowa.
All right, you're looking forward to it.
Janis Joplin with Summertime. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Summer and fall brings a lot of things, but one thing that everyone can agree is the wonderful local foods that we can grow and purchase throughout these seasons. It is true, however, that for some, the bounty of our local food options in the Iowa community is not well known. Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability for Iowa State University and also Sustainability Coordinator for the city, joins us today and brings four guests along to talk about the second annual Local Food Festival here at Iowa State, which will be hosted by the university on September 13th. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you back. Who is joining us? You have brought a whole room full of people.
Yes, we've filled your studio here. It's so exciting. Well, I have with me Linda Knave with Value Added Agriculture Extension at Iowa State, also Stephanie Downs with our ISU Wellbeing Program, and I have two interns from the Office of Sustainability, Sindhu Jaram and Laura Lynn Haas.
Well, welcome, everybody. It's a great, right, diverse group we have joining us today, and I'm so interested to learn about how you are connected with the local food festival. So let's learn a little about this event. Mary, tell us what is going to be happening.
Well, I have to say, this event was on a wish list a few years ago. I just happened to have the opportunity to have coffee with another wonderful extension person who couldn't be with us today, Lynn Hoyes. Lynn and I were talking about, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful to have like a farmer's market on campus and to bring local food and encourage our students to have more connections with our local food community, to experience, meet producers, that sort of thing. We planned and planned, and then we actually put together an event with the wonderful people that are surrounding me today, as well as many others that weren't able to join us and fill the room even more. But so what this event is it literally is like a farmer's market on Central Campus. We will have producers, vendors that use local foods for their products and services that they provide, and also a number of student organizations lining the sidewalk between Curtis and Beardshire. So folks can come, they can sample local food, they can purchase produce as well as products that are made from local food, and learn a lot about different opportunities to enjoy local food and connect to local food opportunities in our community.
Well, so Central Campus will be a farmer's market in a sense.
It's so exciting, yes.
So Linda and Stephanie, tell us about your interests in taking part in this event, especially being in the leadership roles in the planning committee. How does this connect to your program's goals and visions?
Well, I work in extension value-added agriculture, and I'm a horticulture specialist in that area. And so by bringing farmers and those who use farm products to Central Campus, it builds awareness of our young new purchasers that are coming along, the students and the faculty. So what we're going to do is highlight some of our locally grown produce. We have a couple of vendors coming. We have Red Granite Farm north of Ames. We have Cherry Glen, which is out of Des Moines. We have Lucky George Farm, who's a vendor at the Main Street Farmers Market, and Walnut Creek Farm. So we'll have these farms selling local produce and honey and things like that. And then we'll also have some of the student groups there. So as far as the horticulture vendors, they're there because this is really a highlight of the season. We're seeing the fruits of our labor coming on with tomatoes and peppers and squash and all kinds of things like that. And then we have the value-added products that they make from their produce and fruits and vegetables. So it's going to be exciting with that. So we encourage people to bring their reusable grocery bags along and purchase their produce right here at our farmers market on Central Campus.
And again, this is September 13th.
Tuesday, September 13th from 9:30 to 1:30. So we'll hit all of the breaks. It'll be fun and exciting. We have a lot of other groups that I think the others will talk about that'll be there too. So Lots of things to see and do.
And I've got a little bit different focus with the ISU Wellbeing is really our employee wellness program.
And you're Stephanie.
And I'm Stephanie, yes.
Okay.
And we are, you know, one of the things we're trying to do is really support our employees in being able to adopt healthy lifestyles and looking at it from a more comprehensive aspect of well-being, beyond just the jogging and broccoli is what we're saying a lot, kind of moving it beyond that. So with that, we can kind of really increase the awareness to the employees on what are some of the local foods, but also the idea that there's the sustainability piece of being a part of the community, supporting the community, using the foods that are coming from the community. So there's really a twofold in there for the employees to get out, and it's right there on campus. It's easy for hopefully easier for them to be able to get to some of those, see some of the vendors and see some of the different produce and products that are available. One of them that's really fun for the employees, and it helps to sort of highlight it there, is our horticulture club. It's a student club, but they bring the foods from the research farm up by Gilbert. And on Fridays, the employees can pick those up. They order them throughout the week, and they can pick up the fresh produce, be berries or apples. I know apples are a highlight because they're always – the cyclone apple is always fabulous. So we really like to highlight some of that, and then there'll be – other vendors, and I can speak to those a little bit if you'd like, but City of Ames came last year with their water, which was fantastic because it starts to talk about, you know, getting away from the plastics, getting away from bottled water, using our local water. And we have some of the best water around. There's no doubt about it. If you go anywhere else, you know, you come back to Ames, you want their water. But they were a hit last year, filling up water bottles, handing out water bottles and filling those up. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of the longest lines we had, and had to get some extra help to help them keep up with everything. So that was fun.
Wow, sounds like you guys are in danger of having folks want the farmers market every Tuesday.
On that would be. I think you say every year. Every Tuesday could be a little rough.
Right.
That's such great connections on the campus. Tell us more about the involvement of the students, Mary.
Right. So we have two students with us today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's so exciting for me in the Office of Sustainability. I have the wonderful opportunity to work with an exciting leadership team made up of 10 different student interns. Two of the students that I brought today were actually a part of the local food festival last year, and I thought it would be really interesting to share the student perspective related to this event. And so with that, I encourage Laurelyn and Sinduja to step right up here and talk a little bit about your experience with the local food festival.
Sure. Well, last year I helped at the Live Green booth, getting people, you know,
move a little closer to the mic. Yeah.
Last year I
It has to be said, she's doing this standing up, so.
The room is so full of people excited about the local food festival. Like I said, last year I was helping out at the Live Green booth, really helping to get students aware of the connection between local foods and sustainability, because a lot of people think of sustainability as a very intangible thing, but when they see local foods right there in front of them and get to taste samples and get freebies, then they really get a tangible connection. And so I think the most fun part for me was helping people to see that sustainability wasn't something that was too big for them to take a part in, but it was something that they could help out with every single day just by going and visiting different vendors around Ames.
I'll give your name again.
My name's Laurelyn.
Okay. And
I'm Sinduja. Okay. And one great thing about last year is all the wonderful colors and smells that came through as students walked across. And as we did our tabling event, we saw all the encouraging faces as students kind of roamed around, got free samples, and noticed all the many different ways that they could eat sustainably as well as healthy through their local resources. And it was really fun for students just to have a good glimpse at all the opportunities available. Mm-hmm. And this year, I know there's going to be a lot more vendors available. So definitely encourage them to stop by between classes on their way to different homework assignments. So, yeah, definitely.
Mary, what are the goals for the event? What are you really striving to do with the event?
You heard from our guests that really, first and foremost, we are excited to connect students, faculty, and staff more closely to the local food we have in our community, the folks that produce those, and also the vendors that incorporate those local foods into their products and the services that they offer this community. So we really want to increase that awareness and that connection. Certainly, you've heard the word sustainability pop up a few times, and that most definitely is a primary goal on my mind, is to incorporate the importance of that connection to our local resources and supporting our community through supporting the producers and the vendors that use these local foods and how that connects to sustainability. Certainly, we've talked many times on this show about the three facets of sustainability, the environmental impacts related to working with producers and vendors that are close to you, certainly many environmental impacts, the economic impacts of how we support our local community and our local economy, and most definitely the social impacts of building, strengthening, supporting your community, having that connection to this wonderfully tasty food. I don't know about you, but there's something that really strikes me when I get to meet a producer that has actually produced the food, shake their hand, talk to them, learn more about who they are and their families and what they're supporting and what they believe in. And then also to hear them say, I just picked this morning. I don't know. I don't think it gets any better than that. So those are impacts that I personally really connect to. And I don't know. What about you guys, Stephanie and Linda? Other things you want to add?
Well, we do have some groups that will be at the local food festival that are nonprofit organizations, kind of loosely organized or fairly well organized, and those include Plant a Row for the Hungry and Food at First, which takes much of this local produce, excess local produce, because there's a lot of excess this time of year, and they use those products. And, for example, Plant a Row for the Hungry provides fresh produce to 5 food pantries and food organizations, and Food at First, of course, uses the local produce to prepare meals, I believe, 6 days a week in the community. So this local food is very important to help feed the hungry of Story County as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we're trying to give the students, expose them a little bit more to the experience as well. You know, I mentioned the Horticulture Club earlier, and it was fun on the planning committee because we have ISU dining there as well, kind of working with them. So they work together, so the foods that are ready out at the research farm are coming in, and the dining is using those foods then to make some of the tasty treats that'll be available on Tuesday for them to enjoy. And the recipes, they design the recipes specifically for those foods that are available. And letting students know that this is happening, the foods that we're growing right here as part of Ames, of Iowa's, of Iowa State, and the work we're doing is going right into our local dining, and they're really working together and teaming up. Healthiest Ames is another group that will be there, and we've got some of the dietitians from the food science and human nutrition that are going to be there, and they're taking some of that fresh produce and showing how to make some of those fun little treats, like, you know, everyone loves pizza, a little bit different type of pizza, but really tasty, fun stuff that the students seem to enjoy, the employees can really enjoy, and come away with some great ideas.
Yeah, and I would, I would just add also, and maybe this is something that Sinduja and Laurelyn can talk more on as well. I don't know if that's where you're going or not, Ursula, but we also have a number of student organizations that are going to be there that produce local food from ingredients and are offering it to sell. Mm-hmm. And so we're supporting the initiatives and the missions of a number of our student organizations, getting the awareness out about the wonderful things that they do as well at this event.
Well, good stuff. Any comments from you guys, students here?
Well, for me personally, one of the
get a little closer. Yeah.
One of the impacts that I felt like the local food festival had on me was it really encouraged me to get out and explore different vendors in the community. So before the local food festival, I had never visited places like Wheatsfield or the farmers market, and afterwards, I was really motivated to go out and see what other resources were out there.
Nice.
Another thing to add is how easy it is for students to go and find these around our community. Ames is very small and community feel, so you can definitely go around and see which produce and local foods you can find around you easily and accessibly.
Okay, thank you. So we've heard some of what to expect at the festival. Any other thing you'd like to say, Mary? It all sounds very tasty.
Exactly.
Anything special that is going to be new at the fair this year?
Well, I think a number of new vendors, so we'll have new smells and new tastes that will be very exciting. I have to mention that we did this last year, and we'll offer this again this year, that we will be providing free bike tune-ups from Outdoor Recreation Services, so anyone can bring their bicycle and get a free tune-up while they may be waiting to sample or to fill up their water bottles with water. And I think water being a local food is a really interesting thing to consider as well. I would say that we have a number of new sponsors this year. Okay. And so I want to give a little shout out to them. Our sponsors for the event this year will include Blue Bunny. They'll also be giving out some wonderful coupons to all of our participants. Iowa Farm Bureau, the ISU College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, the ISU Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition, ISU Dining, ISU Extension and Outreach, ISU SNAP Ed, the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, the Office of Sustainability and Value Added Ag. And I think we've doubled the sponsors that we had last year. So we're excited to have that additional support.
So in other words, last year the event was a success.
It was a success. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That motivated us to say, let's do it again. And Now, gosh, I don't know if we use the word annual, but we're sure hoping that we will be able to use the word annual again and again and again.
Where can one go to find out more about this?
So you can go to the LiveGreen website. That is livegreen.iastate.edu. On the front page, we've got a little slider. If you click on that, you'll get more information about all the different participants that will be there offering samples and free giveaways, as well as just more information about the event in general.
Okay, and so this is September 13th?
It is. It's this coming Tuesday on Central Campus, 9:30 to 1:30. And also I would say, as well as a lot of free samples to the first 1,000 people, we have a reusable grocery bag that you can take with you to farmers markets again and again and again.
And to fill them.
And to fill them as well, most definitely.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about this. Any last words?
I'm just really excited to have this event again. I can hardly wait. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. So
I'm thinking about the ice cream that's out there.
Right, exactly. Well, and I'm looking at this wonderful poster of local honey, so I can hardly wait for that as well.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. This is Local Talk, and you've been hearing from Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability for Iowa State University and also Sustainability Coordinator for the City, talking about the Local Foods Festival at Iowa State, which will be this Tuesday, September 13th. And with her to describe this event have been Linda Nave, Stephanie Downs, Sinja Ram, Laurelyn Haas, and thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
In the misty morning fog with a heart so thumping in you, a brown-eyed girl.
This is Local Talk. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. And that was Brown Eyed Girl. For me, one of the great carefree summer songs. And played it for you to celebrate summer as the last of the steamy days come to an end. And we say goodbye to summer 2016. Keith Morgan is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Keith is Emergency Management Coordinator for Story County. And we're graced with your presence once a month. So, Keith, what should we talk about today?
Well, today I actually come bearing gifts. I'm bringing along a poster that our office has, and it's called Be a Preparedness Hero, and this is Preparedness Month.
Actually, Keith, this reminds me that you've been with us for a year, because this was actually the topic we spoke about when you first started speaking with us here at KHOI. We began with the topic of preparedness, and we've come full circle back to this topic because it is a topic that never goes away, right?
Oh, exactly.
And you probably have to tell people about 5 or 6 times to make a preparedness kit before they actually hear what you're saying and act on it, right?
Exactly. And if you have already acted on it, then what we're asking you to do is to get to talk to the people that you care about, that you love, and have them do the preparedness also. Maybe for a Christmas gift right now, you start thinking about buying a preparedness backpack for a family member.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
So we're making a big push for everybody to think about what they need to do to be prepared should something bad go happen, and so that they can be an active part of any response, both as an individual, as a business, and also as government.
Preparedness Month is a month where you focus on making people aware of the fact that they should be ready for an emergency, right?
Exactly. You always see it, especially in the areas with the hurricanes, where if you wait until you're sure the hurricane's going to get there, all of those resources you need to board up the windows and like that is gone. So we're asking people right now to think about what they might need, buy it now, buy it while it's on sale if they can get it on sale, and be prepared should an event happen.
September is the month to kind of reevaluate how prepared you are.
Exactly. And you know, I was talking about buying stuff, but an awful lot of it is free. It's planning, looking through how you can do stuff. And this poster that I've got for you talks about building a kit, looking through what you're going to need and buying those things up front. And they're not expensive. The top of the list is food and water. You can have that food and water. You just make sure that it's something that's non-perishable, and a couple of those jugs of the water that you can buy relatively inexpensive, put it in a safe place in your house, and you've got the most important things for you during a disaster right there, something to sustain yourself.
Anything else on the list here that we haven't covered?
Well, one of the most important things is the third one down there. If you have special medications that you need to have, this is one of the issues that we've run into time and time again. Something as simple as the fires that we've responded to, and somebody has their medication was lost in the fire, and they have to have that medication on a weekend when your doctor's not available to get you, because your prescription was probably lost also. Make sure that you've got that medication in a place where you can grab it as you're going out the door. Some of the other stuff down there that I get in. Go ahead.
Before you go on, is this something you as the emergency management coordinator run into when there is an emergency, that you end up in a situation where somebody needs medication and doesn't have it? Is this a problem that you encounter?
It is. About a year and a half ago, when we had the apartment fire down on South Ames, that was one of our top issues. And it wasn't us. We brought together a whole group of people, the Red Cross and everybody else. But when we were looking at the needs of the people that had been affected, medications was one of the top ones. We could get them sheltering. They had food and water. But to make sure that they stayed healthy, we had to make sure that they got their medication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of the other stuff, and this is something that changes year to year, is to take a good inventory of what you have in your house so that if you should lose it, you can go back to your insurance company and do an annual review of your insurance to make sure that it's adequate for your changing lifestyle.
So as part of your kit, you would have, for instance, a piece of paper or with a list of an inventory of what's in your house or somewhere.
That's
in a computer, a list of an inventory?
Yes and yes. You have it in your backpack. Maybe you've taken an inventory and you've sent it to a family member to have on their computer, because your computer is likely to get destroyed in the event. Or walk through your house, take a video of everything that's there, and at least you'll have a start point when you have to recreate all the stuff that was in your house. Open up all the cabinets and take a video of that so that you have something also as documentation for your insurance company.
Wow. I have to say, I've never thought of doing that.
Yeah, that's... I used to be in the military, and we moved all the time, and that was one of the easy ways. We had to take an inventory when we moved our stuff, so that helped me out. But since then, you know, you have to refresh that regularly.
Okay. So what else goes in the backpack?
Well, copies of important documents. You might remember after we had the fire just a few months ago, one of the most important things is that we got people a driver's license afterwards, because that is your documentation to be able to start your process, especially if you're dealing with FEMA. You have to have some way to prove who you were. So a photocopy of your driver's license, birth certificates, marriage certificates, all of that stuff is also good to either have in a backpack or maybe in a safety deposit box. With those things, you can get yourself up and going again, but don't forget about your pets also. Make sure you have their vaccination, some food, and maybe a carrying case to take care of your pets if you have to leave quickly.
Anything else?
In your car, especially as we start to move towards that evil time called winter, it's more important.
We
don't talk about
that. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
That time when it's not quite as warm as it is now, call it that. But, make sure that you have good warm clothing in there, a way to stay dry if you have to do something with your car, jumper cables, kitty litter to help you get across some of that icy area. Those are some of the things that you need to have. A small shovel. It's great now that they've got these collapsible shovels that could help you get yourself out if you did get yourself into that white stuff that we call snow.
Oh, yes, I remember that. It seems like it's something that makes you feel good when you have all this stuff organized and in place. Then you kind of feel like, you have a safety net.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a safety net. Most of the time you'll forget about it until you drive by somebody that you see is stranded along the road, or you read in the newspaper. I mean, think about what's been happening down in Baton Rouge. We are not out of risk for flooding in this area. They've had some up in northeast Iowa just recently. These things can happen, and that's the natural disasters, and they're the man-made disasters caused by fire or other events that might happen in your house. So it is that insurance policy that maybe you hate to spend the time and effort on buying it and paying for it, but when you need it, it really will make you feel much better that you had it.
And we're speaking with Keith Morgan, the Emergency Management Coordinator for Story County, and we are talking about preparedness, basically emergency kits, to be prepared for emergency and other ways that you can prepare, this being
National Preparedness Month.
National Safety Preparedness Month. And Keith is describing partially a backpack or some sort of container to have in the house that is just there in case there is an emergency, so that if you have to leave quickly or act quickly, you have everything ready to go. Where do you recommend that people keep a backpack like this?
If they have a closet that's near the front door, that's probably the best place to have it, because you don't want to have to go searching through multiple closets or something like that. As you're going out the door, it should be readily available to grab and go.
Now, is there any different advice you would give to businesses?
Businesses, it's business continuity is what they have, and it's a whole separate area of the business management. But you read some of the statistics on how businesses may have a plan, but they don't ever actually train on the plan or exercise the plan, or just like we talked about, revise that plan as things happen.
What is business continuity?
Business continuity is making sure that if something happens to your business, that you can get it up and running again.
Uh-huh.
And we're a big proponent of that in emergency management, because if we take care of the citizens, we also needs to be the whole community that we take care of. And the citizens without a job is not a community.
So what is an example of something that a business would do for business continuity?
They would have plans, if possible. They might have alternate plans for people to work at home, should they not be able to come on in. They identify what their critical processes are and what will it take to get those processes up and running again. And then they either train people to do that, or they have plans to bring people in to be able to do that sort of stuff. They also look at their suppliers, because if they're okay, and we saw this with the tsunami in Japan for the auto industry, we were fine here, but many of their suppliers were all concentrated in an area over in Japan that was affected, which made it difficult for them to keep running afterwards. So it's a comprehensive review of what you do, what's important to make that happen, and what you can do to build some redundancy and resilience into those processes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the anniversary of the most dramatic example of that is coming up in 2 or 3 days as September 11th approaches. And many businesses disappeared within a few hours in New York City with the destruction of that building.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are many different things that can impact a business. And the first part, the first step for them is to actually look in where are our risks, what can affect us the most. Some of them, such as an event like that, are very difficult to plan for. But if you plan for general categories of catastrophes, then you'll be able to adapt to it. But you have to plan for it. You have to train your people on it. And that's where we say once you do a plan, then train your family on what that plan is. How are we all going to communicate afterwards? A business, how are we going to, if a tornado were to come through this town, how are we going to be able to make decisions to get ourselves up and running as quickly as possible?
So this is Keith Morgan asking you, have you created your preparedness kit in your home, in your business? Does your business have a continuity plan? Have you taken an inventory of your house? Do you have access to medication? If you, what does that really mean? Do you have spare medication, or what does that really mean?
If you can, definitely have spare medication to get you through the first 3 to 4 days. Mm-hmm. You have to rotate that medicine through to make sure that it doesn't expire.
Stays current.
Right, exactly. But you have to have some of that just to make sure, because, again, if the overall system was heavily impacted, our ability to help you get more. And if it's something you need every day, you've got to make sure that you have at least enough for 3 days' worth out there.
So is the this backpack, this kit, is this is something you should probably revisit once a month or every few months just to make sure everything's current and that?
Every few months. That's why we have a preparedness month. Mm-hmm. Now's my reminder to you that if you have been good enough to put together one of these, go look at it. Make sure that all the documents in it, I just got a new driver's license. You got to replace those kind of documents out to make sure that they're up to date.
Okay, Keith Morgan, anything else before we wrap up the show?
One of the most important ways is that that we can talk to you is if you'll go to Story County Iowa Alerts, which is on the Story County Emergency Management webpage, if you Google it, and sign up for Story County Iowa Alerts. It's our mass notification system. We can't put in your cell phone, which most people are using to communicate with nowadays. Go sign up for put your cell phone in there so that we can get you as quickly as possible information on how you can help yourself and help the overall response through the system. We're not going to use it unless it's an absolute requirement. We might test it once a year, but that is going to be critical for us to be able to communicate with you. So, again, go to our website, Story County Iowa Alerts, sign up for it so you can get those notifications.
And are you prepared? Go to the website, Story County.
Story County Emergency EMA on there, or you can go to www.beready.iowa.gov, and there's also a whole bunch of information there.
Beready.iowa.gov. Go to the website, check out, and see whether you're prepared for an emergency. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next month, right?
Yes.
And this is Local Talk. You've been hearing from Keith Morgan, the Story County Emergency Manager. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. Earlier in the show, we were joined by KHOI reporter Whitney Wright and Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability for Iowa State University and the City, Nancy Nave, Stephanie Downs, Sanja Ram, and Laurelyn Haas, who were speaking about the food fair, which is happening at Iowa State Central Campus on Tuesday, September 13th. Local Talk is on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., and you can also hear the entire show and all past shows on our website, khoifm.org, where you'll find some of the links and information about people you heard about on the show. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor, and our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. Other music you heard today was Summertime by Janis Joplin and Brown Eyed Girl by Van Morrison. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as the audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday